Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Welcome to DNF. This is a podcast about Formula One racing, which to this point in 2023, Jessica Smetana, had been an uninterrupted streak of Red Bull dominance, of Max Verstappen hegemony.
Mm-hmm.
Until Singapore.
Woohoo! Are we celebrating? Can we celebrate?
We can celebrate.
Spencer, a week ago, we were like, the sport is in crisis mode. People want to be entertained. They don't want to watch the same guy win every week. And now I feel like we spoke it into existence. We knew it was going to happen eventually, and it finally happened.
This is my favorite thing. As a fan of any sport, you can say this. You should be like, hey, it's happening. Next week, it's happening. All we had to do was 10 times in a row say that.
Yes.
And eventually,
and it came true. Did I think it would happen like 6 weeks ago? Yeah, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Manifesting is real. All you have to do is be wrong enough times, and eventually you will be right. And can I just, let's unpack how improbable the Ferrari victory at Singapore was, given everything that's happened. Okay. Coming into this race, okay, we had, I think, is this a three-month streak? Like when you include the breaks and everything, do we have 3 months of nothing but Max Verstappen at the pole and, or I'm sorry, at the finish?
I think it goes, well, Sergio Perez won a couple, but I think it goes back to even Brazil 2022.
Yeah.
That one of the two of them has finished in first place, which is a long time, like a year.
So yeah, that's a long time to see the thing. And of all the teams you thought would break the stranglehold on the one spot, all right, Ferrari, I'm just going to say, not my first pick. Not the ones that I thought would be the ones that you go, hey, we're going to end up with a great display of competence. We're going to end up with some real skill, both at the driver level and at the management level. Remember, the driver level's not been the issue for Ferrari. We've had a lot of good performances by the drivers. They've just been let down by everything else.
Yes.
Happens with Ferrari. They would not be my pick. I thought maybe Mercedes would snipe one.
Yeah. I thought
maybe even McLaren.
I thought Fernando Alonso at the beginning of the year. Maybe he'll be the first guy to do it.
Maybe he'd be the guy to do it. No. Andiamo Ferrari is what we ended up with. I don't know about you. I was ecstatic when look at that.
I have a Ferrari shirt on right now. I'm not even like a Ferrari stan.
Wow.
In fact, people compare a lot of the teams I hate in sports to Ferrari and one team I like, and I don't like that. But I had to break it out for today, Spencer, because we're celebrating today.
You had to, and can I say, of the Ferrari drivers, like by script, I like this script, okay?
Mm-hmm.
By script, I love this because either driver would have been an interesting pick to me, but Carlos Sainz, both by getting pole and by finishing the race in a way that I do want to discuss, because Carlos Sainz,
such a finish,
giant brain, Carlos Sainz. I don't know if you saw this meme, but it's a triangle and it's like a cut triangle and it's like levels of intellect, and it's like normal person, and it's like brainiac, then it's like Einstein, and then like the very peak of the pyramid, somebody has gone Carlos Sainz.
Yes,
right here.
Yes.
Explaining memes out loud.
I love it. Internet. It's my favorite genre of conversation.
But the way that he won it and the timing of this for Ferrari, so sweet, because yeah. This is a team that's had its basic competence questioned. Like, not
as
just
they should. Yeah.
Right. As deservedly so.
Deservedly. We all thought something was going to go wrong. He was on pole on Saturday, and we in our F1 group chat, Spencer, you, me, and Doug, mm-hmm. our producer, Doug, shout out Doug. Yeah. I said, spoiler alert, Verstappen's going to win, which, mm-hmm. you know, the Red Bulls were off pace the entire weekend. We'll get to that and the technical directive and the conspiracy theories and everything else that's fun about Formula One. But mm-hmm. even so, I was like, Ferrari surely is going to screw this one up. They're going to do something wrong. They're going to forget to put on a tire. Mm-hmm. Someone's going to run over a screw gun. I don't know, but something's going to go wrong. And nothing went wrong. He ran in front the entire race. Well-timed pit stops for him. We'll talk a little bit about Leclerc. Leclerc got sort of screwed by some strategy calls, but maybe like not necessarily, like maybe had to happen for someone to win, for Carlos right. to win. But like it was perfect, and he raced perfectly at the end.
I thought this race was scripted specifically for you personally. Once Sainz got in there and then Lando Norris had the two spot, I thought, mm-hmm. oh, if this plays out the way that I think it could, this is the Jessica Smetana special.
It was. And those two are like best buddies too. Mm-hmm. So when they're at the end, and Carlos had to do this incredible balancing act of not wanting to push too hard so that George Russell on new tires could pass Lando Norris and challenge him, but also not go so slow that Lando Norris, who had DRS, could pass him. Like he had to manage his tires. He had to do all of this. It was such a tightrope for him at the end of this race. And the Mercedes pitting and putting on the medium tires and the three front runners having the hard tires on made it really, really exciting, like super stressful, but very exciting. And I think he should get so much credit for walking along that tightrope perfectly, because other drivers in the same position, like we saw mm-hmm. with George Russell, a tiny, tiny millimeter of a mistake, and that's your entire race. All of the strategy, all of the hard racing goes out the window in the final lap. And Carlos didn't make a single mistake. He did it perfectly.
See, that's what I was anticipating. I thought when I, you know, at my most Ferrari cynical, okay? That's a technical term.
Baseline is Ferrari cynical.
Right. To be Ferrari cynical, to see good things happening for this Ferrari team and instantly think, oh, well, they're going to screw that up. Or someone will screw that up for them and they will be right. the accomplice.
What fresh hell awaits?
Right. You're just waiting on it because the walls are real close. Like I thought if nothing else takes them out, Singapore, it's a very tight track and it's very, very easy to make a mistake that will put you in the wall. In fact, the reverse of what I thought would happen happened. I thought Mercedes was going to catch them. And I thought when they caught them, it would be George Russell, because George Russell was out for blood. Mm-hmm. You know, if we got team radio of George Russell going, okay, boys, we need to win this one. Okay, like, put me in the target. You know, we can get there. We have pace. Let's go. Like, I thought Russell thought he had it in the bag, and he ends up binning it super late in the race in the final stretches and getting Ferrari'd. I thought, like, that was...
It's a verb now.
It is. It's a verb. Yeah. Mercedes got Ferrari'd. They Ferrari'd themselves. And just a joy to see, especially because I know the payoff whenever Carlos Sainz wins is that he's going to sing a Sade song. And as silly as that is, I wait for it when it happens, you know, that he's finally conducted his first, in his words, smooth operation as a Ferrari driver. Magnificent. Just a great thing. On the last lap, him and Lando Norris basically doing a Talladega Nights move, shaking and baking it, keeping Lando just close enough.
Yeah.
To ensure that he had somebody between him and the Mercedes. Oh, breathtaking. This is what, like, if you have been watching this and as a relatively new fan, you think, I can't believe the same thing happens every week. Understand the payoff comes loaded.
Yeah.
You did all of the work to make this satisfying. And then when the payoff happens, it's this sublime.
Absolutely. It really made me wonder what this season would have been like if you just, like, Thanos vanished Red Bull from Formula One. Because I think if this is how tight these cars are running together at the end of a race, the technical regulation set is working, right? Like, mm-hmm. these cars are all following and overtaking at such a close distance and are so tight. And most of the time we see it happen sort of like in the midfield while Verstappen is 30 seconds ahead. And it's not this, like, you're not going to manage your tires the same way. You're not going to be like fighting for position the same way as when you're in the front three, right? So, like, mm-hmm. it's hard to imagine one for one if you just take Verstappen out, like, what it's like. But if Red Bull doesn't exist this season, and this is how close it is now that McLaren's running at the top, Mercedes has fixed their issues, and Ferrari's not making stupid-ass strategy mistakes. Like, this is what I signed up for. This is great. I love it.
I also want to talk about a fantastic finish for Lando Norris. This, to me, is, you know, this is, of course, old teammates reuniting for...
Besties.
Yeah, besties reuniting for a glorious finish. This continues one of my favorite storylines this year, which is the McLaren comeback. That orange has been a very, very beautiful color over the second half of this season as they have figured out more and more and more about what makes that car work and about how to put them in the best position, about consistently good performances from rookie Oscar Piastri and from the guy that they view as their bellwether, Lando Norris. I love it. This is nothing but a continued upward happy trajectory for McLaren. I love that Mercedes had good competition between the two drivers and we're still figuring and are still trying to make the best of that car. Absolutely adore that was a key storyline. And I wanted to get to this because I think you definitely have some thoughts and at least have been observing the conspiracy theories a little more closely than I have about the struggles of Red Bull. Mm-hmm. This is the hole in the story that we've been talking about. We've talked about the happy finish for Carlos Sainz, okay? We've talked about the smooth operator. We've talked about the bromance between the two drivers that was evident in the teamwork that they exhibited across teams on the final stages of this race. And we've talked about Mercedes continuing to improve. We have not talked about the elephant in the room, which is Red Bull struggling at Singapore, period. Both drivers across the team.
Yeah, so I think the conspiracy theory is that the most recent Formula One technical directive targeted a flexible floor component that the Red Bull was using, and they've had to now remove it or adjust it and is impacting their overall pace. And this is a targeted directive to even the playing field because Formula One can't let Max Verstappen keep getting away with it. Now, before we debunk the conspiracy theory, Spencer, does that sound plausible?
Let's enter a realm that we call it Newyland. Newyland, okay? Which is where the gap between the technical understanding of what actually makes these cars dominant and the fans' perspective, the gap is so vast that I can attribute it to magic if I really wanted to. I could, because usually the answer, if you go to the people who know what they're talking about, the answer isn't simply one thing.
Yeah.
It's not. It's usually a series of tweaks combined with the overall skill of production combined with the skill of the driver. It's a complex equation, right? It's usually not one thing. Because if it's one thing and everyone knows it, then everyone else starts doing it, right? Like, it's not that one thing. So let me say, is it plausible? Yes, it's plausible. If only because if it's taken this long for people whose jobs it is for it, what the hell is the common fan going to do with this information? Right?
I find what's plausible about it to be that Formula One would, in a misguided effort to even the playing field, make a obvious change to a front runner's car and think that no one would find out that that happened. Like, right. Has Formula One made regulation sets to even the playing field between cars in the past? Yes, mm-hmm. That part's incredibly plausible. But the like conspiratorial nature of it, which I think implies that it's done in secret and nefariously, mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily match with what I think Formula One could actually pull off. Does that make any sense?
It does make sense. I think that's and also, if you wanted to believe, like in my heart, I know if you want to believe a conspiracy, you're going to go ahead and believe it.
Yeah.
You will. It's going to give you power. It's going to give you some certainty. I can't take that away from you, even with like all the information in the world, especially when I don't have the information to refute the thing you want to believe. Because at this point, it's all happening behind doors and at such high technical levels that it's going to take me a month to understand it, mm-hmm. right? New Eland is filled with that. That's one of the reasons we talk about magical engineers. It's one of the reasons we go, oh, well, they got this guy and he's got a giant brain mm-hmm. and he understands these things better, right? Like that's the like Adrian Newey effect. That's why I'm calling it New Eland and this terribly named concept that I've come up with.
But
in New Eland, you can go ahead and just describe, yeah, it's absolutely like a law or a regulation targeting Red Bull and trying to bring everyone back. There's a problem here. One conspiracy theory feeds another. Who is the team, historically, F1 has intervened on behalf of, according to conspiracy theorists, deep into the lore of F1, who is the team that they have intervened on behalf of time and time again at both the technical and at the regulatory level? Ferrari. Old school Ferrari. Oh, F1's going to protect Ferrari. Well, who won this weekend? Ferrari. So like, I don't think that's what happened, but it's definitely, for somebody who wants to believe that and is already sort of like buying lock, stock, and barrel into certain historical theories of how things work in F1, it's not good.
Yeah,
it's not a great look. And also, by the way, for Red Bull fans, you could go ahead and just buy this too, because what does it do? Well, it shores up your assumption that everyone's out to get you.
Yeah.
Right? That your historical upstart status is still disrespected by the long-established powers of F1. It's classic shit all around.
I think, like, if there's anything that convinces me that this is not a conspiracy theory, it's that mm-hmm. Christian Horner has said that it's not, and he would be the most inclined to be like, hey, wait a second, this is not fair, because we've seen him do that, like with the whole porpoising thing last season. Like, he's mm-hmm. gonna be the first guy that's like, this is not fair, nothing is fair, like we didn't go over our cost cap, we just spent a lot of money on catering, like he would not be quiet about it, and he would not vouch for Formula One if that were the case. And Red Bull's excuse for the poor showing in Singapore was, frankly, a very simple one that I think does it for me, which is that they screwed up the setup on Friday because they had to change the ride height to suit the Singapore street circuit. And it was different than what they anticipated. Mm-hmm. And once they screwed up the setup, they couldn't fix it in time to run the race that they should be able to run with their car. Ipso facto, Verstappen and Perez finish out of the podium, but still have, you know, decent enough races that they get some points.
Yeah, I think y'all will be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems
unfortunately,
like you'll be fine.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Like, it would be great if the last leg of races in this season ended up being hyper competitive. It is interesting to me, though, when you talk about ride height, that, like, okay, we do have just my own selfish interests. I will be at the Vegas race. That's a street circuit.
It is.
Are we going to have ride height issues there? Is that something that you might? Yeah.
Right.
Just a first time track, right? I'm
intrigued because, yeah, Singapore's been on the calendar for a while now. So my question is, mm-hmm. like, how did they screw it up so bad? Like, this is a team notorious for not screwing things up. Like, there's been other street circuits on the calendar this season. They've gotten it right. So what was the issue here where they were so drastically off that they weren't competing for a podium? That I don't know. That, I mean, people make mistakes. Shit happens. I listened to a long, incredibly detailed breakdown of like the track surface the other day. And I'm like, yeah, that, sure, I'll take your word for it. I don't know. But that part is, I don't know, maybe indicative of some more issues down the road with the other street circuits, or maybe not. Who's to say?
I would like to shout out one other driver from Singapore before we sort of move on to questions and discussion of the upcoming slate. Liam Lawson.
Oh, yeah.
Liam Lawson. Damn, son.
Yeah.
Coming in cold. Working, I think, at a disadvantage in several different fashions, and still coming up with a top 10 finish.
Knocking the other Red Bulls out of qualifying on Saturday. Pretty solid race for him.
Absolutely incredible.
The AlphaTauri seat.
Yeah, just consistent. And I think consistent given, and we really haven't talked too much about this, coming in cold and consistent on a track that is a bear. It is technically, it is a very difficult track to master. I mean, you could look at Red Bull if you want evidence of that. So Liam Lawson, nice work, dude. Absolutely stellar work on your part.
Yeah. So, well, okay. Before we get to questions, I do want to mention something that happened right after we finished recording last week, which was Helmut Marko going on an Austrian, like Red Bull streamed or produced show, saying that, this is his quote, we know that Sergio Perez has problems in qualifying. He has fluctuations in form. He is a South American, and he's just not as completely focused in his head as Max Verstappen or as Sebastian Vettel. This is also not the first time that Helmut Marko, who is a high up member of the Red Bull team, has referred to Sergio Perez as a South American, even though Sergio Perez is from Mexico, which is part of North America. Mm-hmm. He got a ton of flack from Formula One fans, but like heard nothing from the FIA for a couple days after this. Again, it happened like early last week, like right after we recorded. And then eventually they wrote him a letter and were like, hey, warning, you can't say shit like this anymore. And that was it. That was the end of that entire fiasco, which I think is super embarrassing for him and for Red Bull. It makes Formula One look bad. Like, this kind of language is unacceptable and terrible and completely like, what are we doing here, buddy?
Yeah. Thanks. Thank you for the insight, Helmut. Such famously distracted South Americans as Ayrton Senna, right? Like, yeah, just dumb as hell. Like, that's
so dumb.
Yeah, there's got to be, that should be, I think that should be an established like response from F1 organizationally, is that they should be able to just be like, Helmut Marko's dumb as hell. There's no place for that. It's unacceptable. Also,
yeah, we don't want that around here. And it's stupid. And it's just incorrect and wrong. Like, what are you talking about? And if I were Sergio Perez, I'd be like, look at what I'm up against. This is crazy.
It plays into so many of the worst stereotypes people might assume about the people in charge of the sport.
Yeah.
It plays right into them and gives them heft and enforces an image that a lot of the drivers have been super vocal about fighting, if not the owners, and a lot of the things that the fans don't want to see across the world, right? Not especially up top, because part of F1's challenge is marketability, right? How do we market the sport, which has a double-edged sword of, it's a sport that is a very moneyed and luxury forward sport. Also, it's a very moneyed and luxury forward sport where there's not a whole lot of access either to get in it or to get in the building to watch it. Mm-hmm. That is, it's a double-edged sword. You want to grow, but there are inherent obstacles already. And then you have somebody who is very powerful within the sport saying this. It's on so many different levels unacceptable and stupid.
All right. So we will move on to some listener questions. Spencer, where should we begin?
Oh, I want to start with Liz Polarski's question. Do you think Carlos and Lando made an unbreakable vow to help each other if they ever found themselves 1-2 in a GP?
Yes.
I believe in love, so yes.
Yes, heart emoji. I do I think that like one of the things that's so crazy about Formula One is how competitive it is between drivers and between teammates. And it is just an insanely competitive sport. And yet, like, I want to believe that there is some sort of like pact between the two of them not to ever screw the other one's race up or do anything like that. And maybe, like, I have to believe that if you're driving, you know exactly which cars are where and who's driving them, and you make decisions based off, like, when we see Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton go side by side, right, and like race mm-hmm. really hard against each other, it has to be the same for when you like the other guy too, right? So yeah. yes with a heart emoji. I think that that's true.
I mean, think of Carlos's face when he realized who was behind him. That's a pretty good moment when he goes, oh, we get to do the thing. Yeah.
I loved it. I loved it so much.
Delightful.
Honestly, it was so great. From 5 pound bag, should Leclerc just never pit?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he got
thought about it.
He got screwed by the double stack because there was so much traffic in the pit lane. Even though Ferrari did a really good job getting Carlos in and out, he had to wait so he didn't get in the way of another car coming through, because that's how close they were all running when they all came into pit. So that totally, I guess, not like backfired, but I think Ferrari knew they had to run. They ran two different strategies, right? So like, you can't really compare the races one-to-one, but you have to give the guy who's on pole the more favorable strategy. And obviously he's going to come into the pit lane first because he's ahead. So mm-hmm. Charles, was it the right call to pit him? Like, probably yes, but that is the no pun intended. That's the pitfall, is that all the guys were bunched up right there and it totally screwed him up.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.
There is also a running gag here, which is if a driver for Ferrari is going to end up getting the butt end of one of Ferrari's decisions, it was going to be Leclerc this year, right? Again, if you just believe in running gags, conspiracies, or other irrational patterns of behavior that keep showing up, and again, you go, this pit strategy seems kind of risky. I wonder if that's going to benefit Charles Leclerc. The answer this year is probably not. I want to go ahead and talk about Car Lando, because this gives us an opportunity to talk about other relationships between drivers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Which is from Sean. Of all relationships between drivers on competing teams, is Car Lando the closest? I think, by far. Like, they're golfing buddies. Right?
Yeah.
They're seen on social media actually hanging out.
They play paddle together. And like, Leclerc is kind of like part of the group too, and Max is kind of part of the group too. But like, I do feel like if you're ever really down in the dumps and you need a smile on your face, just go on YouTube and watch any video of Carlos and Lando interacting, either when they were teammates or now. You will have the biggest smile on your face, because it does seem like they really do love one another. They are besties. I can't even think of another friendship like theirs. Can you think of one among current drivers? Like, I feel like everyone low-key hates each other under the surface.
Yeah, I think that Lando and Max have a good professional relationship, right? I think they're pretty cordial. I don't think they have the like buddy buddy, let's have let's have a boys weekend kind of energy that Lando and Carlos have. So they have the super professional kind of relationship. We don't really the people I wanted to talk about is like who do you never see? Like what drivers never ever hanging out? Valtteri's one of them, because Valtteri's like, I'm going to go ride a bike 400 miles into the wilderness, which is peak Finland right there, to be like, how are you spending your weekend? My girlfriend and I are biking to Lithuania. You know,
you're so right, and yet I get the sense that everyone loves him. Like
they do.
There was a recent Formula One, which is like great. It's like this guy's never around, and yet still, like everyone's like, yeah, he rules. There was a recent Formula One video where they were asking the players to guess who the baby pictures were of, and Valtteri's is like the most obvious little blonde Valtteri baby, blue eyes, like unmistakable. And after all the drivers like saw the picture, they all just started laughing, like they were giggling because it was such an like they just love him and it's so adorable. I don't know, I love that.
Yeah, like, and I will say this, Max, for his reputation for being super prickly and very 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 blunt in the way that he says everything, Max gets along in the paddock. Like Max talks to other drivers. Max hangs out. You know, it's not like he's Michael Jordaning the situation at all.
Yeah, yeah. Michael Jordaning's another good verb. We've got Ferrarying and Michael Jordaning.
Yes, and the Nui Zone. There we go. Just write these all down.
I'm gonna write them down. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. We haven't really talked about Yuki Tsunoda and everything that befell him this weekend. Also, like the Max Verstappen lack of a grid penalty on Sunday, that was kind of bizarre that like nothing happened there, and like AlphaTauri didn't even like try to make a case for it with the stewards. We have one question from Cinco de Mayo. Did Yuki just say fuck it, get me to Japan instead of finishing the race? I wouldn't say that. I Yuki kind of got screwed this weekend.
Yeah, although if that was the decision to make, maybe, like organizationally, maybe that was the decision. If you have not seen the damage from the crash between him and Sergio Perez at Singapore.
Wild.
No, that car is torched.
Yeah.
That car is, that is, when you send those photos to the insurance company just sends back LOL in the email. Like, it's torched. So I don't think that's what they did, but effectively that's what happened. Like there's I think they got a puncture, they decided it's not worth it, let's just completely reboot. Not, you know, that's the flip side for AlphaTauri this weekend. You get one driver with a surprisingly great performance, and then you get their most consistent driver having a disaster of a weekend.
Yeah, and speaking of totaled cars, Lance Stroll didn't even race on Sunday because his car was in such bad shape on Saturday, and the team said that he was still sore on Sunday and didn't race him, which I think is like a rare good cautious decision by sporting people that we don't see very often. Like I hope he's okay. I don't know what kind of shape he's in, but it was a nasty crash. His car looked like it was just like in pieces after that Saturday crash, but he did not race at all on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Alonso had a terrible day. So Aston Martin weekend.
Yeah. Just this is maybe what we should have seen coming with a team that you are going, oh man, their performance is so much further ahead.
Yeah.
It's a lot like a team that peaks early season in any sport. You go, keep an eye on that. Wait for the regression to the mean.
Regression to the mean. I was just going to say, water finds its level, so they say.
Like, still, like, we are repeating the same line we've been saying for a month and a half about Aston Martin, which is, well, you know, they're still way ahead of expectations and might be running out of gas on that, right? We might be at the point where we go, y'all might want to pick it up a little bit.
There was a good question in here about the smooth operator, Carlos Sainz, connection. It says, in honor of another appearance of Sainz smooth operator, what would be your dream pairing of current grid driver and signature song they sing after a great result?
George Russell singing Baby by Justin Bieber.
What? How did you just come up with that?
Imagine. Imagine the splendor of George Russell tunelessly singing Baby.
Baby.
When that, with his accent, it would be it would be so innocent and pure, Jessica.
Imagine. I thought you were going to do it. So I know you're a Florida guy. Like, I won't back down Max Verstappen sing-along. Because, you know, he doesn't back down.
No, that would be, I think that would be good. Also, it's very, very to the point and very on brand for both him and Christian Horner. So I think that's probably, it's probably a good go for him. Who's getting Pound Town? That's what I want to know. Who's going to sing Pound Town as they cross the finish line?
Valtteri, for sure.
Given that on this very broadcast, he proposed the notion of a full frontal spread. You're correct. God,
we need to get him back on here. That was like the highlight of 2022
did you ever consider, by the way, that like an actual F1 driver, one of the very few people paid to do this on this program, came on and said, hey, you know, maybe next time I'll just show the whole hog.
Like, I've never met him before. He doesn't know me.
Doesn't know
He doesn't
us.
Know you. Nope. He doesn't know Metalark and DNF.
Don't
no.
know who's going to be listening. He's like, hey, you know what?
What if
maybe
I showed
my
you
my penis in a photo? maybe that'd be a top seller.
Just absolutely bonkers. But yeah, Pound Town for Valtteri. Okay, I like it, Spencer. George Russell, by the way, he was really upset after the race, as he should be.
Been.
He blew it, and he was so mad at himself, and it made me feel bad because I was like, even in spite of him DNFing, taking the show name too literally, it was hard to watch that kind of meltdown happen to someone who's been in F1 for as long as he has.
He really cares. And I will say that for George. I don't think that's an act. I don't think we're getting the Russell Wilson, I'm running for president while, you know, also doing my job and trying to convince everyone to like me. I think George Russell really cares. I think he thought they could win that race. And then two terrible things happened to him in a row. One, he looks up and Lando Norris is the guy in front of him. And Carlos Sainz is, you know, gaming DRS to make sure that we're getting as obstructive a strategy towards the end of the race as possible. It's a bad spot to be in when you've got the gas and you have all the momentum you need and the person in front of you does too. Also, he crashes. Like the most, like it would be frustrating to just finish third and instead he ends up completely destroying his car and not finishing. I get it, man. Let it out.
Also, I didn't even know this until yesterday, but Valtteri also DNF'd on the last lap, I think.
Again, we're laughing because you're like,
okay, sure. Yeah. What, like, Alfa Romeo, what's happening over there, guys?
We're working some stuff out.
Yeah. Holy shit. Are you guys okay? All right. Should we answer one or two more? Or
Sure.
Okay. What do we have here?
I'm going to say this from... This is I think, an interesting question. Mm-hmm. From William Marcy Tweed. Is it ever okay to root for Ferrari? Okay. Root for whoever you want. Like, is it okay to root for Ferrari? Is it okay to root for one of the continually competitive and prestigious racing brands in the world? Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always thought if you root for Ferrari, you know what you can always fall back on? And I've said this before, but let's
Dallas reiterate. Cowboys? Oh.
Romance. That's what you call Ferrari. Right? You get racing, you know, you get racing red. You get the, like, at Maranello, we make these seats custom for you, right? I don't know if you've known anyone who's bought a Ferrari. I know one person. It's not like I have boys who are continually picking these up. When you get the Ferrari experience, you can always cite, they make it for you themselves. They hammer it out on a tree stump and their racing team is carrying the legacy of so much greatness. They make movies. Like, think about that. If nothing else works out for you, the romance of being a Ferrari fan is of the kind where we get Adam Driver to play the guy who ran the company, right? That's a CEO movie. Don't think it's like, oh man, great innovator. What's no, that's a movie about a guy who made cars. That's, and they make movies about you. So yeah, you could root for Ferrari before we consider even that, like, Carlos Sainz and Charles Leclerc, two really gifted drivers who are both in really good cars that are sometimes managed by people who, I don't know, appear to take naps during races or just to be playing the Switch, right? Like, just playing Animal Crossing during races. I don't know.
Yeah. Is the Prime Minister of Italy a Ferrari fan? Yeah, she is. She took pictures with them at Monza.
Right.
Does that mean you can't root for them? You know, no, I'm wearing a Ferrari shirt, but that is in the con column for sure.
I'm an American. Our recent choices of leaders do not allow me to be overly judgmental in this, but to note. Yeah.
Yeah. We won't do the what F1 team does Trump root for.
Absolutely not. Game. That is a pathway straight to hell.
You want to great for SEO though.
Yeah, if you want to take a water slide straight to purgatory, let's do that. I do want to ask one
probably
more.
Us, but yeah.
I was going to say this is related. One more question. That is from Formula One. Does Gunter know he's in hell?
Oh.
Yes. Yes, and he doesn't care.
No, because you know what? He's going to get 45 uninterrupted minutes of Drive to Survive time in the next season, regardless of what Haas does.
I will never kick the cameras out. Never.
He's going to threaten someone's meals. He's going to say some really crazy shit about a certain nationality, and everyone's going to love him anyways.
I climb the mountain. My car's a shit. I am Gunter. Like, that's his whole life.
He's fine.
Can you imagine him with an advantage?
And also, I wouldn't say North Carolina's hell. Like, it's not my favorite Carolina, but it's not that bad.
They got to listen. As long as Gunter gets to get his, you know, quarterly spree at Nordstrom's, which is
Belk.
Was it Belk? Yeah, he's a Belk. Yeah. This is my favorite. My favorite F1 celebrity sighting is somebody being like, I saw Gunter at Nordstrom's in North Carolina.
He's too good for Belk. All right. He's definitely in hell then.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Southern style at bargain prices. Look into it, Gunter.
All right, Spencer. Well, Formula One will be back next weekend in Japan for the Japanese Grand Prix. It's always a good one. It's going to be at 1 a.m. So TBD if I'll watch it live. I guess it depends if I'm still awake celebrating a Notre Dame victory or drinking my sorrows away from a Notre Dame defeat. We'll see. But we'll do a pod next week anyways.
Absolutely. We got to talk about one of the coolest tracks in F1, Suzuka.
Moving to the front of the calendar next year, Spencer. It's going to be in April. So we'll get two of these pretty close together, which is kind of cool.
Ooh, you know what? If it's in April, that means I might go.
I actually looked into it.
All right, let's follow up on this, because DNF goes to Suzuka. That's a discussion we need to have.
I'm down. All right, we'll see you next week, but not in Suzuka, here.